We're here to fight like hell. They're trying to take away our collective bargaining agreements as well as dismantle the post office, and we want to say hell no to that.
And I join you in saying hell no to that. Hell no!
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Detour Doc, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brant Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. As usual, there is far, far too much going on to even give us a fighting chance to cover everything, but I guess that's what our broadcasts are for each day over the coming week, to try to catch up as the unprecedented tyranny, autocracy, oligarchy, whatever you want to call it, of the Trump administration continues to bear down. Despite some encouraging pushback last week, in particular by a bunch of lower federal courts, hearing challenges to the Trump administration's lawless gutting of statutorily protected federal government agencies, federal workers, constitutional rights of all people in the U.S. and/or under U.S. government jurisdiction, no matter where they may be, even if the Trump administration has unlawfully detained them without criminal charges or criminal records and flown them out of the country to be disappeared into an El Salvadorian prison. We reported last week on several of those issues, several of those cases, along with the Trump administration's ongoing attempts to gut the federal government itself, including by trying to fire tens of thousands of workers at the Social Security Administration, Veterans Affairs, the IRS, the EPA, the Forest Service, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and its National Weather Service, which I know has Desi Doyen in a tizzy these days.
Oh, yeah. We kind of need the National Weather Service and NOAA to make sure we have good weather forecasts. Yes, we do.
Oh. And elsewhere, of course, including at the Voice of America, which we covered those layoffs in detail over several different shows last week, not just the layoffs, but the shutdown of Voice of America itself, including during my interview with VOA's chief national correspondent, Steve Herman, as Trump's attack on freedom of the press continues to broaden as well. I got a bit of an update on that story on Voice of America, if time allows, today from over the weekend, as journalists at the venerable worldwide news outlet, which has been broadcasting to hundreds of millions around the globe each week in more than 60 languages ever day in and day out since World War II, those journalists remained silenced as of now, but they are fighting back with a lawsuit filed over the weekend to challenge the Trump administration's shutdown of Voice of America and its sister networks like Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Voice of Asia, etc. I will try to get to that today. Since, by the way, we haven't been able to open the phones for several weeks, despite my vow to try and keep the lines of communication open with listeners, well, I can try to take a few calls today, if possible, if you'd like to ring in on any of the ongoing nightmares in the U.S., or around the globe, either Forum or Aginnum today at 818-985-5735, if you'd like to get in line now. I've also got some elections and voting news that I've been trying to get to for days. We will see where we go today. But first, as protests against the Trump administration and Elon Musk and his Doge bros have continued to grow all over the country in recent days, it was U.S. postal workers who took to the streets across the nation on Sunday to raise the country's awareness of what Donald Trump has been hinting could be an attempt to privatize the Postal Service, despite its constitutional mandate as an independent federal agency. The National Association of Letter Carriers and American Postal Workers Union members are rallying against efforts to take away the independence of the USPS. Thousands of postal workers and their supporters demonstrated across the nation over the weekend to protest proposals to dismantle the U.S. Postal Service over the long term and a USPS agreement to work with Elon Musk's Doge boys to try and trim some 10,000 jobs in the next few weeks. Social media posts showed rallies from Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas to Indiana, Missouri, Florida, to New York City, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C. Popular hashtags included hashtag fight like hell and hashtag hell no. President Trump's administration has not yet announced specific plans to privatize the United States Postal Service. But amidst rumors of job cuts and a potential merger with the Commerce Department, thousands of postal workers rallied across the country over the weekend. The Postal Service, of course, is one of the few government agencies explicitly authorized by the United States Constitution. It traces its roots to the Second Continental Congress exactly 250 years ago this year in 1775 when Benjamin Franklin was appointed as the first Postmaster General. I wonder what he would think of Louis DeJoy. In any event, those in attendance at Sunday's rally in downtown Chicago said the reported proposal to drastically cut and or privatize USPS threatens affordable delivery services and jeopardizes jobs. Hundreds of unionized letter carriers and their leaders packed into Chicago's Federal Plaza on Sunday morning to send a message to those in D.C. who might come after those jobs. The rally was one of more than 200 that have taken place nationwide over the past few days as the embattled Postal Service fights to keep its independence. Trump last month addressed rumors that the USPS might be absorbed into the Commerce Department, a move that would effectively make it part of the executive branch of the government. But for nearly 60 years, the USPS has funded itself without taxpayer dollars. Supporters feel that any move to take away its independence will cost thousands of union jobs and threaten the Postal Service's universal mandate to deliver mail and packages to all, regardless of location or profitability, 6 days a week. Quote, do you think privatizing the U.S. Postal Service is a good idea or a bad idea? Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois asked the crowd in Chicago over the weekend. They responded, bad idea, in unison. Here in downtown Los Angeles, supporters of the Postal Service also rallied. National Association of Letter Carriers President Brian Renfro was speaking at the rally, angrily rejected plans to privatize a social or slash jobs at the agency, telling the crowd, quote, we had an election in November. Some people voted for President Trump and some people voted for Vice President Harris. Some people voted for other candidates. But you know what none of them voted for? To dismantle the Postal Service. Several Democratic members of Congress from California joined Renfro here in L.A. to speak at that rally, including Los Angeles Congresswoman Maxine Waters.
We're going to make sure that all the members of Congress understand the importance of the post office to America, and they're prepared to support it. And any that can't support it really should not be elected to office.
The call for privatization has led to, as I said, some 260 rallies in total nationwide aimed at preserving the USPS. During a swearing-in ceremony for the Commerce Secretary a few weeks ago, Trump criticized the Postal Service, saying, quote, yeah, it's still been just a tremendous loser for this country. Tremendous amounts of money that we have lost, he says. Of course, the Postal Service is not supposed to make money for the nation. It's supposed to serve its people, which it has since the nation's founding, and has done so without taxpayer government funding for the past 60 years. Last month, the Associated Press reported that Elon Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency planned to cut 10,000 jobs from the USPS, an effort described by Postmaster General Louis DeJoy, appointed by Trump during his first term, as addressing, quote, big problems and improving efficiencies, though it's unclear how cutting 10,000 jobs improves efficiency or addresses big problems. Joining us now is Mark Dimenstein, sorry about that, Mark, president of the American Postal Workers Union, or APWU, where he has served since 2016 after working for the Postal Service. Since 1983, the APWU represents more than 200,000 Postal Service employees and retirees and nearly 2,000 private sector mail workers as well. Oh, Mr. Dimenstein, it's been a few years now, but welcome back to the broadcast, sir. Do we have you, Mark? Mark Dimenstein, did we lose Mark? Okay, we may have lost Mark. We're going to get him back. He had said, he expressed concern as these rallies were going on over the weekend about the potential privatization, stating, quote, the basic potential change is that there are a handful of billionaires that would like to take public entity and public dollars and turn it over to the private sector and private dollars. The beauty of the Postal Service, Dimenstein said. There he is. Is that it goes anywhere to anybody, the Postal Service. Sorry about that. It goes anywhere to anybody. Well, let's find out from Mark himself. There you are, Mark. Hopefully we got you now.
Speaking.
There we go. All right. Welcome to the broadcast, sir. I can. Can you hear me?
I can.
All right. Perfect. Welcome back, Mark. Sorry about the technical issues. Recent polling, Mark, indicates that the Postal Service is one of the most highly regarded federal agencies among Americans. Pew Research Center found 84% of respondents expressed a favorable view of the USPS. And yet, it seems the USPS is always under fire, particularly during Republican presidential administrations, especially during Donald Trump administrations. Why do you think that is? In other words, what's the attack on the USPS about, even though it's apparently the most widely supported federal agency in the country?
Well, that's the $64 question. I think there's actually a simple answer, maybe complex in some ways, but simple. We're really seeing a struggle between Wall Street and Main Street. And what I mean by that is the efforts on the part of this administration, the Heritage Foundation, Wells Fargo from Wall Street just put out a report of how great it would be for investors if the Postal Service was privatized because package rates would go up. So what they want is they want their hands on the public till, the public commons, the public money, so they can make private profit. But when I say Wall Street versus Main Street, that doesn't do any good for the hundreds of millions of customers, the people of this country that use the Postal Service. Mm-hmm. So it's in the interest of the people to have a public entity based on service, not business, based on service, not profit. But it's in the interest of a few wealthy billionaire investors that want to get their hands on this public money. And I think that's why you see that constant battle over many, many decades and really over generations. Even though the people of the country deeply support the post office, yes, times are changing. Yes, the way we communicate with each other changes. But the post office is always there, whether we use it for e-commerce, whether we use it for voting, whether we use it for birthday cards, whether we use it for financial transactions, whether we use it to get our medicines. So it's there for everybody. People respect it, trust it, want it. But there's a few investors that don't. And that's the struggle that's going on right now. Go ahead, Brad. I'm sorry.
That's right. I was going to say one of those investors, I think, is billionaire Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick. Right. He recently opined in public that it wouldn't be any big deal if Social Security recipients failed to get their checks for a while. He has been talking about merging the Postal Service with the Commerce Department. That seems like it might be a first step towards privatization. But effectively, it takes away its independence, puts it squarely into the executive agency. How would that step, short of privatization, I guess, how would that change the Postal Service and the way it's worked for some 250 years?
Well, it may not change it the first minute, but it's absolutely would be a huge step towards privatization because it would take away the independent character of the Postal Service that was set up by Congress. Anything to take it away would literally be illegal, as well as outrageous. So up under a billionaire commerce secretary who wants to privatize everything, I can add to Lutnick, Elon Musk was speaking to J.P. Morgan, another Wall Street giant firm, a week or two ago, and said that he said he believed in privatizing everything, and he singled out Amtrak and the United States Postal Service. So they're on a mission. They see an opportunity. They have a lot of power, but their power is going to buck up against the power of the people of this country who, no matter who they voted for in the last election, support a public United States Postal Service. And those voices are going to be made loud and clear.
What's your reaction, Mark Dimenstein, to Donald Trump's comments during Lutnick's swearing in that the Postal Service has, quote, been just a tremendous loser for this country, tremendous amounts of money that they've lost. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, I the Postal Service is not here to make money.
That's right.
But apparently Donald Trump sees the service as a loser because they've lost money?
Well, look, it's very important for all of our listeners out there to understand the post office does not run on tax dollars. So number one, it's money that's being used to serve the people of the country. There have been some challenges. The post office was deprived of cash flow from a 2006 law that said they had to pre-fund healthcare retiree benefits 75 years into the future. No other company, public or private, ever had to do it. So they didn't have the money to modernize, to get in the right equipment, as there's a shift from letters to packages and the like. You also had a lot of inflation. Post office has one of the biggest fleets in the world. You can imagine what it did to you and I filling up our gas tank and then multiply that out 250,000 times a day. So it's, there are some challenges, and declining letter volume has affected the revenue stream. And that's a product of mainly the internet. And that's why package growth is so vital. But even last quarter, the post office actually made money. So it's not all gloom and doom, but it's very important for the people to realize that this is not tax money that they're talking about. And the post office needs to be able to get through this transition and turn everything in the right direction. And I think they've made some positive steps towards that, as reflected in the last quarter finances.
So to clarify, it's the purchase of stamps. It's the purchase of postage that runs the post office, right?
That's right. It's the postal services and products. The law from 1970 says the post office has to run off its own revenue. And so it's, like I said, there are some challenges, but there are some hopeful signs. And there's no reason, if Congress would do the right thing along the way, there's no reason that the Postal Service won't be vibrant and vital for generations to come, even with the changes in the way we communicate with each other.
But that phrase, if Congress will do the right thing in the years to come, is doing a lot of work, Mark.
Yes, it is. It is. Look, there's some simple things. The Post Office has billions, tens of billions of dollars in their retirement funds, in their health care funds, And the government, the federal government, makes all that money stay in federal treasury. So they earn a couple percent a year. And in the meantime, medical cost goes up 8 or 10% a year. And guess what? They have to make up billions of dollars in differences. Those are simple things mm-hmm. that the Congress could do if they wanted to help the bottom line and finances of the Postal Service. And to go back to your question about Donald Trump's quote yeah. and always losing money. A lot of that is on paper, and a lot of that is the way the government forces the post office to put all their money into the federal treasury, not be able to invest it in safe harbor accounts. And that all makes a huge difference. And even the way that they have to record things makes a huge difference. They're not bleeding $9.5 billion of money. Mm. That's a paper loss in large part.
And a lot of postal services around the world actually participate in postal banking, where you can open up a bank account, a savings account at the post office as a way to help fund them as well. Congress has sort of tied the hands of the Postal Service, if I'm not mistaken, preventing them from taking on new services like that, that might, in fact, help them make money. Am I right about that?
You are 100% right, and it's not a radical idea. The United States Postal Service had the United States itself had a postal banking system between 1911 mm-hmm. and 1967, mm. and it worked, and it works all over the world. And it not only brings in revenue, but it provides those kind of services that the people of the country need. There's a post office everywhere.
Yep.
Where we are trusted. You have tens of millions of people that are unbanked and underbanked, stuck in this predatory lending industry, this check cashing yep. industry that just rips hardworking low-income people off,
yep.
working people off. And those are wonderful things that the post office could do. And you're right about Congress tying the hands of the Postal Service. Now, there was a slight improvement in 2022, new law, Postal Service Reform Act. And in that law, the Postal Service is now allowed to negotiate with local, state, and tribal government
uh-huh.
to do government non-postal, in quotes, non-postal services.
Uh-huh.
Much like we do now with passports with the federal government. There's certain state, whether it's hunting licensing, fishing licensing, who knows, marriage licensing, whatever. There's financial services, paycheck uh-huh. cashing, debit cards. All of that could be run through the post office now through local and state governments, if that can be worked out between the headquarters of postal management and those local entities. So we're actually very strong on expanded and new services. Why not have EV charging stations in front of tens of thousands of post offices?
Yep.
Or for a whole nother example of how the post office's mission is to bind the country together. Mm. So that can be done in all sorts of ways. Having a strong EV charging system throughout the country, largely with the foundation of the postal system, there's 33,000 or so post offices throughout the country.
Yep.
That would be a great thing for the people of the country.
There are about 200,000 postal workers who are represented by the APWU that you're the president of. There are actually, what is it, something like 600,000 postal letter carriers and postal workers around the country.
There's about 600,000 total.
What would privatization of the Postal Service mean to, well, really to union workers and non-union workers alike? Would they lose the federal protection, job protections that they have, rights to collective bargaining and so forth that they enjoy right now as federal workers that would be lost if they did privatize the service?
Yes, yes. And I think it's important to underscore that we believe, and most of the people in this country believe, in good living wage jobs. And because we're unionized, we do have good living wage jobs. Every worker should have good living wage jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Our union contract that defines our wages, benefits, and rights as postal workers is between the American Postal Workers Union, and the other postal unions have their separate contracts, and the United States Postal Service. If the United States Postal Service doesn't exist in whole or in part, we don't have those contracts. So workers will definitely lose the kind of wages and benefits and rights that they have now. And of course, the people will lose that universal service that demands by law that we go everywhere, 169 million addresses a day, no matter who we are and where we live. That would be lost. Post office would be closed. Rates would go up. Costs would go up. And wages and benefits would go down. And good jobs build good communities. So our communities would suffer as well.
And I think I sort of want to underscore what you say there, Mark Dimenstein. Buy a first-class stamp, a forever stamp, whatever it's called. I can send it out, send a letter to the middle of nowhere in Alaska for the same amount that it essentially cost me to send a letter down the street. That is by mandate of the federal government. That would be a mandate that would no longer exist. Is it a mandate of law or is it of the Constitution that is the case?
Brad, the Constitution does... it does enshrine the post office right there. It said post office and postal roads. Now, Congress can make laws along the way that don't take a constitutional change as long as they respect that right that's enshrined in the Constitution. But the Constitution doesn't say how many days a week you get mail. Mm. The Constitution doesn't say whether you have to drive 30 miles to pick up your own mail. Mm. The Constitution says there will be a post office and post road. So it's very important that it's in the Constitution, but privatization in whole or in part would certainly jeopardize that right that's enshrined in the Constitution. And we constantly remind all these folks on Capitol Hill that they have an obligation to uphold the Constitution and do things that makes the post office more successful, not less successful. But as I said in the beginning, this is really about how to enrich Wall Street and the investors and the private corporations and pick the pockets of the people. When you got Elon Musk running around hollowing out government and government services to the people, this is part of the same thing. And Brad, there was breaking news today that you may not have heard about that your listeners probably have. The PMG, Louis DeJoy, resigned about an hour or two ago.
Really? I did not know that.
And your listeners are probably saying, how come they're not talking about that yet? But I think that has to be understood. This is not a struggle about who the postmaster is today, who was yesterday, who will be tomorrow in some ways. I think we have to look at that is that Louis DeJoy was not a privatizer. Mm. And he was forced out by this administration. Mm. In our view, he was forced out precisely for that reason. He was not a privatizer. We didn't necessarily always agree with what he was doing. We didn't disagree about the need for change. We had strong disagreements about the way some of those changes were being rolled out, being implemented.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, why would this administration force out this particular PMG? And I think the answer lies in that he was not a privatizer. He was trying to uphold the best of from his viewpoint, the public institution, the public mission, and that seems to have contradicted with the Commerce Secretary, billionaire Lutnick, with the White House themselves, with the Doge Elon Musk world, and that's not about efficiency. That's about how to rip off the public sector and move it into the private sector. Because if anybody studies and reads about Elon Musk and all his great wealth, he got a heck of a lot of it with government contracting.
Yep.
And he wants more.
Yeah. And he's getting more. You're right. I did not hear that news. I know that Louis DeJoy had announced last month that he was going to be resigning at some point in the near future. And so I guess what you're suggesting here, Mark, is that he was not well, and he had agreed apparently to lay off some 10,000 postal workers, as I understand it. But what you seem to be suggesting is he was not willing to go far enough, so he was pushed out.
That is what I'm suggesting, and that's what I believe. And that the layoff on 10,000 has been misrepresented, unfortunately, in the press. That was an early out that we negotiated back in early January before Doge was ever knocking on the post office's door. And it's not uncommon in the postal world to have those. We usually have them about every 5 years. And it's generally a reflection of changes in technology, automation, and unfortunately, with automation, you often have less jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has become a way for the post office at times to downsize a little bit, as opposed to doing some other ways of changing people's jobs, moving people here and there. So it's not uncommon, but it was not a layoff. It was a retirement incentive, and somewhere between 9,000 and 10,000 people took it.
Now, I understand that the Postal Service Board of Governors is responsible for choosing the next Postmaster General. What happens right now in this interim, however, when DeJoy apparently stepped down? Who now runs the post office until they find a new PMG?
It's a question I didn't know the answer to off the top of my head until about an hour ago.
Okay.
The deputy PMG, who's a man named Doug Tolino, under the law, when this kind of situation happens, becomes the interim Postmaster General. So he will become the interim Postmaster General as the Postal Board of Governors deliberates on who the next postmaster should be. And all we ask the Board of Governors to do is pick a Postmaster General that believes in the public mission, that does not believe in breaking it up and privatizing it, and will respect the rights and benefits and wages of the hardworking postal workers that make this wonderful institution go around. But it's going to be in their hands.
I hope you don't mind, Mark Demenstein, if we stay in touch with you as all of this moves forward. I'm very obviously very concerned about what could happen. By the way, before I let you go, do you expect Trump and Musk and Doge and Lutnick to actually make this move to privatize the post office? Or were postal workers, rallying over the weekend out of an abundance of caution to let the administration and the nation know that that they are expecting this, or then that they can in turn expect a real fight if such a move was made on the Postal Service?
I think the privatizers are deadly serious, but they're going to have a heck of a time getting by the people of this country. Mm-hmm. And all our polling says, no matter who people voted for in the last election, there's tremendous support, almost equal support amongst Democrats, Republicans, mm-hmm. independents, third party folks. Almost equal amount of support for a public postal service, support for the postal service in general. So, yes, the billionaires are serious. We want people to take it seriously. That's why we're out in the streets. Our union was out in the streets on Thursday, the 20th.
Mm-hmm.
The NALC, the City Letter Carriers Union, was out in the streets, and we joined them, and they mm-hmm. joined us. They were out on Sunday. And the message is very clear. The U.S. mail is not for sale. Hands off the public postal service. It belongs to the people, not the billionaires. And if anybody's interested in taking some actions, they could go to our website, apwu.org/action. And there's a number of things that people could help with. There are petitions. There's phone calling to senators and house reps and so on. It's not going to be a struggle over. It's not going to end overnight. One day in the streets, we had about 300 events on Thursday, and I think the letter carriers had a similar amount,
mm-hmm.
and they were well attended. A lot of good press coverage, but this isn't going to be over tomorrow. We're going to have to send the message as workers united with the people of the country to these privatizers and these billionaires. No. You're not going to pick our pocket. You're not going to turn this over to the private sector. You're not going to turn it over and laugh all the way to the bank at our expense. So anything the good listeners can do to help, we welcome. It belongs to you, the people. Keep it. It's yours.
Message received and right on time from Mark Demenstein, president of the American Postal Workers Union. As he notes, you can get more information and support their efforts at apwu.org/action. And I believe they are both on the Twitters and the Blue Skies, if I'm not mistaken. Now you can find them at APWU. National. Mark Demenstein, always a delight speaking with you, sir, and I do look forward to speaking to you in the future, though hopefully it's for good news, not bad, that I fear. Thanks, Mark.
That's right. Thanks so much for having us.
Take care. You bet. Thank you. All right, we're, yikes. Let's take a quick break here. And depending, if you've got some thoughts, if you'd like to ring in today, you are welcome to at 818-985-5735. If you are in our Southern California live listening area or anywhere listening live via the kpfk.org web stream, we'd love to hear from you, 818-985-KPFK, on what I was talking about concerning the post office or anything else, since it's been so many weeks since I've been able to open up the phones. My apologies for that. 818-985-5735. I got a few other items I do want to try to get to today, but you are welcome to try and derail me if you like. Otherwise, I've got an update. In either case, I want to get to this update on the Voice of America shutdown that we reported on in some detail last week, and maybe even some election and voting stories that I have been trying to get to. 818-985-5735. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to the world famous Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Yeah, it's been a long, long time since Voice of America first began its worldwide broadcast to counter Nazi propaganda during World War II. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. They started on February 1, 1942, and then on up through the Cold War, and every single day since then to more than 300 million listeners around the world each week in more than 60 languages every day since, well, since until just over 1 week ago when the Trump administration, in apparent defiance of the law, since when has the Trump administration ever given a damn about the law? Well, they effectively shut it all down, as we discussed with VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman on this program last week. And then later in the week, covering what a worldwide loss it has been in so many ways, particularly in authoritarian nations, at least for the people of those nations, where its leaders have shut down independent news media. You know, as Donald Trump is now attempting to do here in the U.S. You can listen to several of our shows on all of that last week for free by downloading them at bradblog.com, a service made possible by listeners like you. But we got a bit of an update here before we maybe get to some of your calls, 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, if you'd like to ring in today on how things are going with the Trump and Musk administration, the Democrats' attempts at pushing back on them, the post office, the courts, or anything else, if you are listening live. 818-985-5735. I'd love to hear from you. They did over the weekend, Voice of America, as VOA's Steve Herman reported via his personal newsletter over the weekend. A lawsuit was filed in federal court in New York on Friday seeking to restore the Voice of America. Herman notes that his successor as VOA's White House bureau chief, Steve had been the White House bureau chief for many years during the first Trump administration and then for a few years during the Biden administration. He was replaced by Patsy Witakusara. Apologies for screwing up that name, as I'm sure I did. He was replaced by her as he became Voice of America's chief national correspondent. But Witakusara grew up under a dictatorship in Indonesia herself. And she is now or was, the Voice of America's White House bureau chief and the lead plaintiff in this lawsuit filed on Friday. Some of the other plaintiffs, who for now are anonymous, are among nearly 50 VOA journalists whose J-1 visas are now being canceled now that they have been placed on administrative leave, and now they must leave the country within 30 days. At least six of those face going home to authoritarian countries, writes Steve Herman, where they could be jailed or worse. Indeed, among our covers last week on all of this was the story of Ukrainian journalist Stanislav Asayev, who was tortured and imprisoned in a Russian-controlled region of eastern Ukraine, imprisoned for more than 900 days following Russia's initial incursion into Ukraine back in 2014. Asayev's crime was reporting from on the ground in parts of Russian-controlled Ukraine. He was tortured and jailed for more than 900 days for the act of reporting. Among the plaintiffs in the new lawsuit is the organization Reporters Without Borders, whose executive director in the U.S., Clayton Weimers, said after the lawsuit was filed, quote, authoritarian censorship regimes like the Kremlin and the Chinese Communist Party are loudly cheering for the death of Voice of America. It's clear that Donald Trump's actions will encourage harsher crackdowns against journalists and press freedom, putting VOA and Reporters Without Borders staff, correspondents, volunteers, and supporters in greater danger. If VOA is not already dead, it is in a deep coma, reports Herman, since 1,350 of his colleagues were informed a week ago Saturday that they had been immediately placed on indefinite leave with pay. There has been no new VOA news and information programming. Everyone was quickly cut off from the email server and all the other internal communications. At that hour, notes Steve, the Voice of America began its death spiral, and since then, 550 contractors, reporters, editors, newscasters, videographers, engineers, technicians, were subsequently informed that they were being terminated entirely at the end of this month, a point of news that that we broke with Steve on this program. Old newscasts, he says, continue now to repeat, and a video loop promoting VOA's mission has replaced TV programming on most of our nearly 50 language services, he says. For those systems around the globe that are not automated, that don't have a so-called dead man switch, there has been silence and stale web pages. Audience have received no explanation. Program presenters who are household names in many of their home countries had no opportunity to say goodbye. In fact, I went over the weekend to the Voice of America website, voanews.com, to try to figure out what, if anything, was going on, what, if anything, was getting out to the people on the website. There is nothing. There is nothing there since March 13, whenever it was that the order was given to shut down Voice of America. Those web pages are still there as of now, but that's it. No notice, no explanation, despite the fact that, as I said, hundreds of millions rely on Voice of America and its sister stations, such as the Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Voice of Asia, the Middle Eastern Broadcast Networks. Hundreds of millions of people around the world rely on that effort, and now it's gone. Many of them will have no idea why it has been disappeared.
Yeah, and it's important to make sure that folks remember that Voice of America broadcast in more than 60 languages so that people could hear factual news in their own language. So they not only learned English, but it was also, as many people have told, especially those who were raised in authoritarian countries, mm-hmm. that it was a lifeline to them, a lifeline not just of accurate factual information, but also just a lifeline that there was a world beyond their authoritarian country. I mean, it's a huge loss, not just for America, but for the world.
One of the stories we noted last week was from Washington Post and described how Martina Navratilova, the tennis superstar, in her tiny little village in Czechoslovakia during the darkest days of the Cold War, would listen on their little red plastic radio to Voice of America. As she dreamed of someday being free, eventually she was, and in fact inspired to defect to the U.S. because of the things that she learned growing up from Voice of America. As Steve Herman notes, since its inception in 1942, it has brought news to audiences around the world, including in countries where free speech is restricted or civil society is under threat. It is now under threat here in the U.S. This story, if anything, should underscore that point, even though most Americans are not familiar with Voice of America because it doesn't broadcast here. It broadcasts around the globe. They hear the voice. They miss the voice. The Voice of America, as Steve writes, is funded by American taxpayer dollars, but our editorial independence is mandated by law, the 1976 VOA Charter. In many markets, VOA operates in Chinese, and Russian state-backed media are now producing misleading content that undermines the U.S., but VOA, until last week, was there to counter those false narratives, and they are no more. For decades, he writes, radio listeners hung on to our programming's every words until they would hear the Yankee Doodle tune and the announcer declaring, quote, "This is the Voice of America, signing off." But the audiences knew we would return the next day, he writes. Master Control has now switched our fate to the courtroom, where it will be determined there if VOA has indeed made its final sign-off. Quote, VOA reporting helps keep the public and local journalists informed about human rights violations, violence, protests, and corruption, even in the world's most censored countries, said Reporters Without Borders director Thibaut Boutin after the suit was filed. Trump's decision is not only illegal, he says, it's also a major blow to millions of citizens' rights to trustworthy information and an invaluable gift to the world's biggest predators of press freedom. Reporters Without Borders is proud to champion this battle in U.S. courts, defending access to independent, reliable journalistic reporting for citizens worldwide. We will, of course, continue to follow that story, as frankly, I got to tell you, and one of the reasons I've been covering it is because I see it not just as a national and international tragedy, as Steve Herman described it during our conversation last week, but frankly, as a canary in the coal mine, a huge canary in the coal mine regarding Donald Trump's very serious efforts to try and shut down independent media in this country as well, any way possible, including, yes, the Pacifica Radio Network, which owns our flagship station here in KPFK, where I'm broadcasting from today, yes, around the globe, here in Los Angeles, and dozens of Pacifica's affiliate stations around the country who carry the broadcast each day of the week. Now, Pacifica Radio, as I've noted, along with NPR and PBS, are cited specifically by name in Donald Trump's Project 2025. And yes, it is Donald Trump's Project 2025. He denied he knew anything about it during the campaign. What Project 2025? Never heard of it. Who are these people? Well, these people used to work for you, Mr. President. Oh, those people? Well, I haven't followed them lately. I don't know what they're talking about. But make no mistake, despite denying he knew nothing about it, he has pretty much been following letter by letter, page by page, Project 2025's roadmap since taking office. So, yeah, when they talk about gunning for NPR, for PBS, for the Pacifica Radio Network, I believe them. I take them at their word. And if they're willing to shut down the Voice of America, which, by the way, you know, Donald Trump talks about making America great again. That's exactly what Voice of America did, serving as that voice around the world, letting people understand how, yes, America, with all of its flaws, which were also reported over VOA, which is why Donald Trump wants to get rid of them. But America, with all its flaws, was indeed great and did indeed inspire not only people to come here for freedom, our version of it, but also inspire them to set up media outlets like Voice of America in their own countries when they could, if they could set up a free government and a democratic leadership, unlike what so many of these authoritarian countries have today, including now, I am sad to say, here in the United States of America.
Yeah, I mean, I would just want to underscore the idea that Voice of America helped to demonstrate to people in other countries that, yes, you actually can have a media that will report on things accurately and the world won't explode and fall apart. It is possible. It models a good democratic governance behavior for folks in countries that have never known it.
Accurately, and, you know, if you did listen to Voice of America, if you did read their website in a way that was often critical of the American administration, and that is a very key point. I hate speaking about them in the past tense. We'll see if they ever come back. The Reporters Without Borders points out in their 2024 World Press Freedom Index that the U.S. ranks 55th at this point out of 180 countries and territories in their 2024 World Press Freedom Index, having dropped an astounding 10 spots from just 2023 in 1 year. So, yes, it can happen here. Arguably, it is happening here. Do you understand that it is happening here? 818-985-KPFK. If you have any questions, thoughts, doubts about that, it is happening here. The Trump administration is in the midst right now. This is not something we fear. This is something that is happening. The Trump administration is trying to turn the U.S. into an autocratic, unconstitutional nation along the lines of Russia and Hungary and Turkey and even China and North Korea since his return to office just over 2 long months ago. It is happening now. The administration has begun to ignore court orders. A court who last week ordered that Donald Trump not ship out people accused of being Venezuelan gang members to a foreign country, to El Salvador, to send them into a prison for potentially years without any charges at all filed against them. Several of whom we have come to learn are, in fact, not members of a Venezuelan gang, have no criminal record whatsoever, yet they too have been shipped off to El Salvador, had their heads shaved, thrown into a notorious prison where who knows what they will face because their lawyers in this country are unable to even talk to them. That is happening now. And by the way, if several hundred were sent to Venezuela under the premise that these are these are the worst of the worst. These are bad guys. These are tough guys. These are killers, stone cold killers, as Donald Trump likes to call them. If that's who they are, and it turns out, guess what? They aren't. One guy who's been sent away has no criminal record whatsoever, says he was gay, is a makeup artist, and was here in the U.S. lawfully. And yet he's been shipped away. What stops regular old citizens from being snatched off the street and disappeared to that prison in El Salvador? And if that happens, will anybody care? Will anybody care, especially if they're watching Fox News, where the folks on that couch in the morning just think it's too damn much trouble to have to worry about rights and freedoms and the Constitution and things like habeas corpus and due process for anyone. Here's Brian Kilmeade from Fox News. This was just a few today. This is today. Just this morning.
I also think it's not practical to think that we can do due process on 8 million people.
No.
There's 22 right. million people here at minimum illegal already just in the last three administrations. And there were some people that got through with Trump's administration. If we're going to give every these guys a day in court and a lawyer, we can't do it. They don't deserve it. Our system doesn't need to be double burdened.
They don't deserve it. Really? That gay makeup artist who was escaping from Venezuela, who was escaping a dictatorial regime to come here, who came here illegally, he does not deserve habeas corpus. He does not deserve his day in court. Well, we just don't have time for that. There's 8 million of them.
Or due is there, process is or, too hard.
Or is there 22 million of them? I don't even know. I don't even think Brian Kilmeade knows. But no, we don't have time for that. We got to get him out. So, okay, we send off some innocent people to live, to be tortured, to live in press, in notorious prisons in other countries without access to attorneys for years. So what? We don't have time to do anything about that. We got to get these people out. Do we, Brian? How about if it's you who snatched off the street? How about if it's someone in your family? How about if it's your mother or granddaughter or somebody you know? Is that the time you're going to start giving a damn about what is happening? Or is it only when a Democratic president comes into office and tries to do this to even one person, as long as she's a blonde, white, Christian woman? Then you people on the couch over at Fox News are ready to go to war, aren't you? But as long as they're brown-skinned people, and Donald Trump says they're gang members, well, you couldn't give a damn. We don't have time to give them a day in court, do we? Sadly, this story will continue. I got to get out. My thanks again to my guest today, Mark Dimenstein, president of the American Postal Workers Union, to my board operator, Wendell the handyman Handy, to my producer Desi Doyen, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you can download them all for free for now at bradblog.com. Thanks to listeners like you. Drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com, and on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog. We will see you there until we see you here again tomorrow, I hope. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.